Yo, what's up? Welcome to the OK Beast Podcast, episode 25. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adelier. Joining me this week is Ian Prichot. What's up, Ian?
What's up, Bless?
And occupying the third seat today, we have a special guest, a very special guest. His name is Mike Finn. Mike Finn, how are you doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm doing good. How do you feel today?
I feel well.
Are you going to say fantastic?
Trump, I feel fantastic.
Like, for a second, I thought you were going to make like a pun with your name, which I was going to be really happy about.
That would have been great. I actually forgot.
Oh man, fantastic! you're a dope individual
handle.
Though. Oh yeah, that is your Twitter handle, by the way. Fantastic. By the way, okay, so let me ask you this.
Yes.
Where might people know you from, or where should people check you out if they might not know you?
People would know me from the Kind of Funny community, specifically the Facebook group, because I don't really do forums, so I'm technically on the forum, but not really. And you can find me also online at Fantastico on pretty much any of the any of Twitch or Twitter or any of that stuff. But also, I'm an artist, and specifically for the purposes of you guys, my art is like fan art that you can buy, so like posters shit like that. I sell at the cons. I do the con circuit, and you can find all that at www.etsy.com/ca/shop Mike Finn Designs. So anyways, if you ever want to look at that stuff, it's all like Star Wars and anime and cool shit like that.
Nice.
Yeah, you're not giving yourself enough credit, because as someone who does like people who like follow my Twitter stuff or whatever, I do some drawing stuff as well, and the way you do your designs is real. Like, they're very clean. Like, I would describe them as like, what's the way I could describe it? Like, if you had an office but you were also a nerd, you could hang these things up and people could be like, oh, what's this thing? Stairwares. All right, stairwares. That's a cool thing there. And like, adults wouldn't think it's weird. They would just see it as a good piece of art and then walk away. Like, I think your posters are the perfect amalgamation between fine art, like graphic design, and also like nerdy, like centric, artistic posters as well.
I went to art school and then I went to design school, so that's where that came from.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense.
And I grew up as a nerd, so there you go.
Hey, it's a nice triple threat combination.
Exactly.
Nice. Nice. And you also made the OK Beast logo.
I did.
Right,
the little
Just to make sure.
The little monster. That's
I was like,
me.
Wait, that was it. So you made the Beast and the OK Beast logo. And so if the listeners like that, like, definitely check out Mike Finn's stuff. Like, Mike's stuff is a lot more advanced, a lot more detailed than the Beast logo, but that's just an example of one thing he's done. Also, thank you for that, by the way. Thank you for that on the podcast, because it's very much appreciated, because you have no idea how many people complained to me about the previous logo. And I was like, I don't know, man. I always tell people, like, man, I think it looks all right, but apparently,
even up in the tabs bar, like on your browser. You have it up. I forget what that's called, but the little icon you got up there, the 10 pixel.
I forgot what it's called, but yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, when you open up a tab in Google Chrome, it's right there. So yeah,
cool,
dude,
like
it's awesome. For those who don't know, the OK Beast podcast is a gaming and nerd culture-centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. We are the official podcast of OKBeast.com. If you like the show, remember to subscribe to us on your streaming service of choice. Visit OKBeast.com and follow at OKBeastNow on Twitter. So, guys, what have you guys been up to this week? We can start with you, Ian, since you're the veteran. What have you been up to this week?
Okay, I'm going to try and get through it decently quickly. So, I spoke on the podcast a while ago when I was in Thailand. I was playing a mobile game called The World Ends With You. I just recently finished that. And overall, if you have an iPhone and you're into that sort of style, I would suggest you check it out, but it's probably better on the iPad because it requires more fine tuning.
What kind of a game is it specifically? I know it's a JRPG kind of thing, but
I'm dying.
Oh, you're sneezing?
Okay, I'm alive. No, I was sneezing, yeah. What type of game is it? It's an RPG, yeah. But you use touchscreen to attack. So you have these different pins or attacks that you can use, and you can customize what attacks you use, but it's all based on your touch. So like okay. different attacks require you to do different things. Like sometimes you have to hold, sometimes you have to swipe, etc. I thought it was a good game overall, cool. and the story was interesting. But if you have an, if you have an iPad, it's probably better just because you have more like space to work with. Yeah. Overall, I just recently finished that. If you're into Square Enix games, pick it up. Just recently bought the Phoenix Wright trilogy on my phone as well. I've been on a mobile game tirade, I guess, for a while. I haven't started it yet, but that's on my list. Then recently picked up Bravely Second on the 3DS. Nice. So we're going to see how that is. Yeah, I just started playing it recently. It's pretty good so far. And then still playing Final Fantasy 15, you know, with my boys. And I also am playing the new Yu-Gi-Oh game on my phone as well. Yu-Gi-Oh Duel Links. So
how is that? Yeah. Because I'm about to download it because we talked about it. Have you played other Yu-Gi-Oh games, and how would this game compare to those games?
I haven't played other Yu-Gi-Oh games since like middle school or high school, like early high school. So I can't really attest to its quality overall in comparison, but the way it was described to me was, and this is by one of our friends of the show, Nato, shout out to Nato. He said, pretty much it's like if Yu-Gi-Oh got the Hearthstone treatment.
Okay. Hmm. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's clean. It looks good. There's customizations. Like there's like just this polish on it. And like, for example, when you get a new card, you have to physically swipe down on your deck to get a new card, which is like a cool little like thing. Like it makes you think that you're actually playing like a card game, I guess. And like characters have like animations, like when you summon like Dark Magician or Blue Eyes White Dragon, there's like this giant 3D animation that like looks really beautiful and stuff. It's like really well animated. And yeah, so if you have any nostalgia for those games, I suggest you check it out because it's pretty cool. And the systems are pretty easy to understand if you haven't played Yu-Gi-Oh in a while. Dude, and then what else?
Hold on. Do you know what
I'm excited?
Sorry. I was gonna say, do you know what I'm hyped for? Is like when Microsoft HoloLens becomes like a widespread thing, and we actually get like a Yu-Gi-Oh game where like you play a card and the hologram hologram of it like pops up and like does like the actual animations just like in the show.
Oh,
I feel like that's a thing that's within the realm of possibility now. Like I can
definitely
see that in the foreseeable
future. They had like something like that for the PlayStation Eye, right? Didn't they do something like that?
Did they? Maybe. I don't know, actually.
Yeah, like when you put down a card and then like out of the card comes something. It was like I'm pretty sure it was. I forget the name of it. But yeah, it was a card game, like a 3D card game. By the way, when you said that, I thought you said I thought you said the Microsoft Holocaust, and I was like, what? Like I immediately, I was like, are we killing everyone at the Microsoft office?
That's called their business strategy. RIP Scalebound.
That's fanboyism. I know
when you said that, I was like, geez, bless. I know you like the PS4, but Christ, what's going on? What happened?
Phil Spencer is over there, just like
and then
trumping it up. Sorry, I had to
put
some
like,
kind of Trump
pretty
reference.
Much I broke down this week into things I finished, things I bought, things I'm still playing, and then things I'm excited for, which is actually a good system. I want to kind of steal this. But what I'm excited for is the new Fire Emblem mobile game that's coming out in February, which is – it looks really cool. I'm a huge fan of Fire Emblem, and it's very Japanese, so I'm into that. And it doesn't look like it's like a scam, if that makes any sense. A lot of mobile games seem really shitty and try and like nickel and dime you, but it looks like it's a high-quality mobile game that isn't trying to fuck you. So I'm kind of excited for that. And then Overwatch New Year skins.
Sorry,
Chinese and Japanese New Year, because I just called it New Year's because that's where I live. But yeah, whoops.
Do we know?
Dude, I'm so hyped for that.
Is it just skins or is it other things as well, like a map?
It's only
play mode?
It's only for a week, okay. Supposedly. So I think it's only skins.
When does that start?
This week, the 21st, I think.
Perfect. I gotta get back into it. The game keeps pulling me back in.
Dude, I
like every week I literally just like pop in and I do the 3v3s until I get all my boxes and then I just leave. Like it's the perfect, like, because some days I come home from work like really late, like 10 o'clock p.m. and stuff like that because my work schedule is so strange, and it's the perfect game to just like sit down and like listen to a podcast and just like play 3v3, especially because like with all the training I've done with Blessing and like and Van Aken, like I can kind of just play D.Va and just like win. Pretty consistently. Not saying that they're bad. That's not what I'm trying to say. So like, oh man, I was carrying these guys so bad or whatever. No,
No, we're bad.
I can
bad.
Just sit down, like, listen to my podcast and kind of just, like, and decompress.
She's
and
good on that
the,
mode.
It's a really
man.
Good decompress game. Yeah.
She's a good
yeah, that's what I did this week.
On that mode.
Dude, her skin looks so good.
3v3 D.Va is, I think, like, in the top tier. Like, one of the top three, I think.
Her and Roadhog.
I haven't lost yet on 3v3, although I've only played 10 matches, but always D.Va.
Dang. That's still really good. I need to control my team. No offense to Ian and Alex. But, like, no, those look good, though. I was talking to you guys earlier because, like, when they first announced the Chinese New Year event, I was like, dude, they need to calm down because I just got done with, like, a relationship with the winter event. Like, I just got done unlocking those skins. I spent money on the Reaper, or not actual money, but I spent, like, the in-game currency on the Reaper skin. And I'm like, okay, the stress is over. I got the skins I want. I can chill. Play some Hitman.
I still want a St. Patrick's Day one.
But like, yeah, like I feel like I was like, dude, I just got done with this. Now they're doing another event already. Like I need time to breathe. It's like it's almost like when you have that girl that just doesn't like, doesn't give you space. It's just all up in your grill all the time. I'm just like Overwatch. I need some space. But I saw those skins and I was like, okay, you know what? You can nag me all you want and I'll give in because those skins look dope. That D.Va skin looks off the chain and so I'm all in on it. Like I'm hyped for it.
Do you know where it comes? Do you know where it comes from, by the way?
Chinese New Year?
No, the skin. Like why it looks the way it does.
Oh, is it like a Chinese army thing? I don't know. That's my
guess. They paint crabs. They paint black crabs with designs on them for Chinese New Year.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, really?
And that's why the D.Va like robot in the photo they posted on the Korean thing has its arms down and it kind of looks like a crab.
Interesting.
Oh, cool.
Huh.
That's neat.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Nice. So I've been this last week. I've been playing Mirror's Edge Catalyst. As part of my weekly schedule of games, I'm gonna play to kind of catch up with my backlog. And so I finished it. I'd actually already played it. I played like probably a third of it before back in June, around the time when it first came out. And I played a bit of it, and I really kind of disliked it, which is weird because the first Mirror's Edge is a game that I really liked. Like I played that game multiple times, and I really appreciated that game because of the aesthetic and because of the unique approach to first person gameplay. I feel like it's so cool in that game because it's not about shooting people. It's just about running in traversal. And this Mirror's Edge Catalyst captured a lot of what made the first Mirror's Edge great, but I think it lost some of the momentum, no pun intended, because Mirror's Edge and free running and all that stuff. It lost some of that because it transitioned to open world, which then didn't use the things that made the first game great as well. Because like what made the first game great was the fact that it was the mixture. The game is a mixture of execution, puzzle solving, and getting from point A to point B. And when they opened that up to an open world, that kind of made them spoon-feed you the traversal in a way. Like, there are a lot of hints in the world of, like, hey, you want to climb here because there are footprints on the wall that shows that people climbed here. Or, hey, you want to go this way because, like, there's a literal, like, red line that shows you exactly, like, where to go when you want to go to this place. And when that stuff's added in, it kind of takes away from what makes that game good, which is like the puzzle solving and figuring out, okay, how do I get to this place? But it's a thing that they had to implement because if not, then it'd be really difficult to figure out like where you're supposed to go or how to get to this place you're supposed to get to. Because the open world itself, I don't feel like it's very well designed. It's not designed for creativity. It's more so designed just to be an open world just for the sake of being an open world. So that kind of sucks. But after beating Mirror's Edge Catalyst, I kind of enjoy it. And I ended up being satisfied with it, not like too happy with it, but I'm like I'm good with it. Like I don't hate it. And so that was Mirror's Edge for me. I've also been playing Killer Instinct, which
really
y'all this game, because like it's season 2 is free on Xbox Live Games with Gold.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so I picked it up, or I downloaded, like, the Season 2 characters, because the game's free anyway, but it's only, like, only one character's free, I think. And so, like, Season 2 became free, and I got all those characters, and dog, like, have you guys played Killer Instinct?
Not since.
No, but I follow it.
Not in a long time.
The game is so good. Like, it is so good. And I think I get this feeling whenever I play a fighting game for the first time. Like, I love most fighting games. Weirdly enough, I'm not big into Street Fighter, but I think that's just because it's so difficult and so granular, and you have to, like, get into the weeds of things to, like, really get good. Killer Instinct is basically, it's like Street Fighter in the plane. Like, it's 2D, and, like, it's 2D in the same way that Street Fighter is 2D, but it has more of an emphasis and reliance on combos and countering combos and, like, in momentum. Like, it's, the game is a lot more fast-paced and a lot more, like, there's a lot more happening visually and feel-wise. And so, like, it's a really cool game. It's a really dope game. Like, I was playing that game with the homeboy Frank, also known as Big Bad Beluga on the internet, I guess. And I was at his place, and we're playing it, and I'm like, dude, this game's actually really cool. And so I got home, and I downloaded it and started playing it by myself, and I was like, dude, I'm just destroying people in this game. And there's nothing better than to, like, start playing a game and to, like, realize that you're not, that you don't suck at it. And so maybe that's, like, more of a personal thing of why I personally like this game, is because I don't suck at it. But also, like, I think it feels good and plays good and all that stuff too. And so, like, Killer Instinct is dope. That's how I
rank all my fighters.
Yeah, exactly.
What character did you use, if you don't mind me asking?
I think her name is Hisaki. She's like, she's kind of like
Hisako.
Yeah, yeah,
Japanese ghost character.
Yeah, exactly. She reminds me of that one character in Suicide Squad, the one that, like,
oh,
I can't remember her name, but she's an actress I really like. Plays her.
What's her name?
Was her name the Bushido?
Enchantress?
Witch?
No. Enchantress.
No, it's like witch thing. Yeah, Enchantress.
There. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. She reminds me of her. Like, she's like exactly like her. I think, and so. But yeah, I've been playing as her, and I've been destroying as her. Her and there's another girl. There's like a black girl character who I'm not as good as, but I like using her. She basically has like these things that you throw, like these.
Oh yeah, the two daggers. Yeah,
like daggers, like circular daggers that you can throw at your opponent, then you pick them back up manually. Like, you have to, like, you can either go and, like, press like the left bumper and then kneel down and pick them up, or you can do like down right X or something, and then she'll do like a cartwheel kind of thing to, like, attack and pick him up at the same time. And so, like, I like her character because it's all about, like, balancing and timing and, like, figuring out, okay, I'm gonna throw this, do a cartwheel, pick him up, hit him at the same time, keep that combo going. And it's the game's also, like, a lot easier than it appears to be, because, like, I think if you button mash in this game, you're probably gonna be doing some kind of combo. Like, you're going to be doing good enough. But also, if you have, like, a familiarity with fighting games and know, like, okay, downright to do, like, some kind of special, or, like, if I can jump at this time because I know my opponent's going to try and hit at this time, or, like, I don't know, if you have any kind of, like, fighting game experience or know how to translate, like, Street Fighter or Tekken or these things to, like, other fighting games, then you're also going to have a good time because that stuff translates well. But then you can also tell that, like, Killer Instinct is its own unique thing, because it's like rock paper scissors in a way of, like, when somebody's doing a combo on you, if you do a combo breaker, or the way to hit a combo breaker is to, like, basically guess
hit the same input as them.
Yeah, basically you have to guess, like, what they're gonna input. If they're gonna do, like, a light attack or a medium attack or a strong attack, if you press the right counter, you can counter them and then go into your own combo. And so it's all about that back and forth. But once you, like, start getting those combos up, like, the combos just get more and more ridiculous, and it's just amazing. And so I'm playing a lot of that. It's really fun. I'd recommend, if you have an Xbox One, pick it up and try it out. It's free. At least the second season is free for now. If you get it for free, I guess, any other month, you're just going to have, like, one character, I think. I think that's how that works, and it's probably not going to be as fun. I think you'll have to buy individual characters or buy different seasons to get different characters. I don't know how much it will cost to get every single character unlocked. I feel like it'll cost a lot. That's the one thing I don't know about that game. I don't know how they do their financial stuff, but as far as what I've experienced so far, like, that game's sick. That game is dope. So I'm playing that, and I watched La La Land last night, and man,
okay,
that movie is good. Have you guys seen it or heard of it?
No. I've been wanting not to available. Watch it. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, no worries. Not available in Japan yet, so.
Oh, they don't like musicals in Japan?
No, it just takes a while for some movies to get over here. Like, let me see. I think Doctor Strange, like, literally just came over here.
La La Land is cool. Like, I understand why people love it now. Because, like, going into it, I'm a person, like, I'm not unfamiliar with musicals. Like, I grew up in a household that liked musicals, weirdly enough. Because I don't think you see a lot of, like, well, I won't say that. I was gonna say I don't think you see, like, a lot of black households being all about musicals, But I think that it's not necessarily, I don't think that's necessarily a race thing as it is like maybe like a class thing. Like, I don't think you see poor families as much as into musicals as like middle class families. And I grew up more middle class, if anything. So, but yeah, like my sister, maybe sisters, maybe more than one of them like musicals a lot. I know at least one of my sisters, super into musicals, got me into musicals. We used to listen to the Hairspray soundtrack all the time. We used to listen to the Wicked soundtrack all the time. Avenue Q, Chicago. Like, we listened to like so many soundtracks. Annie, like, y'all, I love musicals. And La La Land is cool. The thing is, like, the thing about La La Land is I think I like the movie and I like the story and I like the cinematography more than I like the actual musical numbers. Like, I think the musical numbers are cool.
That's a good sign.
The musical numbers aren't bad by any means. I think they're good musical numbers. But the thing is, there's only like a couple of them where I'm like, oh, that's really special what they did right there. The rest of them, I'm just like, oh yeah, these are cool songs. I don't know if I'd listen to the soundtrack is the thing. I listened to maybe a couple songs, but I wouldn't like put the soundtrack on or buy the soundtrack and sit back and listen to the soundtrack. But I think that's a me thing because there's other people, like people who I work with. There's a couple of them that actually own the soundtrack and listen to the soundtrack. I know I've heard podcasters say that, oh yeah, they like listen to the soundtrack. And so maybe that's a me thing. Maybe I'm just not like, maybe I've been out of the musical game too long, or maybe it's just not my genre. But like, I really enjoyed it. I won't like say anything about the story because I think part of why I love that movie so much is not knowing what the story is going to be and then being pretty much satisfied with where it went. Like, it doesn't go anywhere crazy. I think, I'm not going to say anything about the ending or anything like that, but I think it's cool. I think it's a good tribute to like old school musicals. It's set in the modern day and you can tell like they have like smartphones and stuff and,
It does? Oh, I thought it was set in the past.
Oh no, yeah, send modern day, which I didn't know that either until I started watching it. Like, I started watching it, and I realized like people were driving places and they're like on their smartphones. And I was like, oh,
okay,
this is set like in current day, but it's stylized. I won't say it's stylized because it's not stylized like it's an old school movie, but it just has that kind of feel of like, oh, I feel like I'm watching like Gene Kelly or like,
yeah, I thought it was old like, Hollywood.
Yeah, no, it's totally modern day, but it feels that way watching it for some odd reason. I can't put my finger on it. There are some scenes where they point specifically at it, where I'll say that, there's a scene where like they're sitting in a movie theater and then watching an older movie, and I think they kind of like throw hints at what they're trying to be a tribute to, but like that, yeah, it's totally like a present day thing, and it's really cool. I'd recommend it to anybody. I mean, I've heard people say that, like, it's their favorite movie that came out this year. I think Marty Sleeve of IGN tweeted that it's his favorite, like, entertainment property that came out last year.
Does it stack up that way for you?
It's cool. Like, it's not, I don't know if I'd say it's, like, the best thing to come out last year. I think, the thing is, I didn't watch that many movies last year. If I had to, like, say what the best movie I watched last year was... it might be it actually, because I didn't watch that many movies last year. I watched Civil War, which was great. I watched Doctor Strange. I watched all the superhero movies. Let me just say that I watched all the superhero movies, and I watched 10 Cloverfield Lane. And I think that's about it as far as what I watched last year. And so like, and I the two best movies I probably watched last year, yeah, probably or from last year are probably La La Land and 10 Cloverfield Lane. I think, and Civil War. Civil War is really good. And I think it's a special thing. I think it's quality. I don't know if I'd say that it like changed me or anything like that, or blew my mind. But it's definitely like, if I had to give it a rating, I'd say it's like a 9 out of 10. Like, it's all the way there.
Okay.
It's like,
well, there
it's,
you go.
It's really good. Yeah. So yeah, there you go. And also like, I guess this isn't something that I really did last week, but like today is like the inauguration, and so we're recording this. On Friday, which there are probably many, many names for this day. We'll just call it Inauguration Day, I guess. So, like, if I sound like I'm depressed or sad or anything, then that's why. And yeah, so, like, I meant to mention this at the beginning of the episode, but this is going to be, like, a more political kind of episode, and you'll see from the topic that we'll tackle. But yeah, I guess I won't really give any political thoughts here.
Not yet.
I want to... last episode was like a depressing episode. I don't know if we should have two depressing episodes in a row. And so, Mike, what have you been up to?
Oh, yes. What have I been up to? I just got my first ever earned platinum, is what I call it.
Oh, nice.
Got my first ever earned platinum in Watch Dogs 2 the other day. And
wait, well, I have a quick question for you before you go on. What did you think of that game? Because I actually played it all the way through the story mode.
I loved
it. And I have some thoughts, but I just wanted to see what you think.
I loved it. I thought it's a really nice game, especially for this past year. Just the game is just such a shining beacon of positivity. And you're just taking down all the things that we hate about this past year. All the, the shitty companies are trying to grab our money. They're trying to take our identity. They're trying to just get every last little bit out of us that they can. And with this election cycle, with all the shit happening with the leaks and the NSA and all that stuff, it just seemed very, it was such a negative year, and that game was so positive, and the characters were so well written and so well acted. When the game was done, I was sad that I wasn't going to be able to hang out with these characters anymore. And I did not expect that from that game, because they kind of looked a little corny in the trailers. But they're so fun. Like, I finished it, and I was like, oh, you know what? This kind of sucks that I'm done with this. Because now I have to play these other games where I have to kill people. I can't be joking around with my friends, which obviously I wasn't joking around, but they were joking. Like, they talk to you while you're doing the missions, which was nice, especially for while you're platinuming it and getting all the collect-a-thon things. It's nice to have these people talking to you and joking with you while you're doing it, being able to customize your playlist, your musical playlist while you're playing it. Like, it was just, I was so happy while I played it. Whereas these other games, I started playing Bioshock, and holy smokes, is that a downer compared to Watch Dogs.
Yeah.
So it's just such a stark contrast.
Yeah. The thing, I actually got the demo for Watch Dogs 2 because it came out as a demo for free on PlayStation. It's like a 3-hour long thing where, the whole game's open, but I think you can only play for 3 hours before it ends.
Okay.
And so I played an hour of it, and I actually recorded a less play of it, and so that'll probably be up soon. And I could actually see because Ian's been telling me to play this game forever, and I guess I'll pick up the demo and see what's up. And from the demo alone, I'm like, oh dude, this game has a lot of style, and even from the first cutscene of when what's his name, Marcus, that's the name of the main character, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So when Marcus first interacts with, I'll call them the homies because I can't remember what their name is, when he's interacting with the homies, and you're like, he's like saying hi to everybody, he's like, oh, what's up, hey, nice to meet you, and he sees Horatio, and Horatio's like, what's up, brother? Then Marcus reacts to that in like a way that like two black people speaking to each other would probably talk to each other, and the way they interacted, I thought was really cool. And then this has nothing to do with anything, but they put me in the open world, and I just started running, and I ran off this it's gap stairs, and I did a backflip or a front flip or something.
Yep.
And I was like, what the heck? What? I did that. I was like, what the heck just happened? Like, why the heck is that in there? Like, that
game has style.
Exactly.
Style.
Like, it has so much style. And whether it's from, the dialogue or the way, your characters or the character's dress or is running, or, the UI and, I think the first thing you do in that game after, the prologue is you go buy clothes. And I went to the clothing store, and I was like, oh, this is a pretty cool clothing store. Like, there's a mannequin over here that's just sitting on a stack of tires, this dope outfit on. And I'm like, I'm never in a game am I impressed by how stylish a mannequin is, but in this game I was.
Yeah.
And I went to scroll through the clothes, and even the menu for the clothes, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, it's pretty it's a pretty stylish game. I'm sad I haven't played more of it. I have a very limited knowledge of what's in the game, but so far it seems really cool. Would you say the same thing, that
yeah, definitely? And one thing I really liked was they do an emphasis on the graphic design of the game, the graphics, which I think it reminds me a lot of, and I may be onto something here because the artist is in the game. It reminds me of the album art or the art that they use for Run the Jewels. I have a feeling.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that it's the same artist, because with the hands, like there's lots of hands giving the fingers and pointing and stuff like that that they use all throughout that game. And I have a feeling that it's the same artist that does the album art for Run the Jewels, and they have a song featured in the game. So I have a feeling that they got that artist to essentially art direct everything that had to do with the hackers. Like all their hacker spaces is all done up with that art, and it's really cool. And one of the characters is a graphic designer, and you go around doing street art for her in the city and putting up stuff like that, which is a nice little touch.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really cool. And one thing with, I feel that if this game came out earlier, like where they had the awards for best characters or whatever, I have a feeling that Marcus would be one of them, because he was written so well and he was so likable and his acting was so good. Like afterwards, I felt like I knew him and he was a friend. Like he was, they were all very, very believable. And the game was so lighthearted and did a good job of making you care for these people. I don't want to spoil what happens at any point, but if something bad were to happen to any of these people, you really feel it because the rest of the game is so light. So when a serious thing does happen, it's a gut punch and you really want to go out there and help them. Whereas the original Watch Dogs, nobody cares. Like it's just another dour, sour person in a dour, sour world, which we have enough of those games.
Yeah.
So I found this game for that reason was special. It stood out because it was so positive.
I agree. Like the first Watch Dogs, I feel like, to me at least, I did not enjoy. I feel like it wasn't enjoyable. And I feel like a huge part of that was, one, like, I feel like the whole game was pretty bland and kind of generic. Like, it didn't feel like anything too unique, aside from, like, they put hacking into, like, a open-world city game. And, like, the main character was also, like, bland and, like, boring and kind of like depressing, and I don't think people in an open world game like that, like people don't like being depressed. And so even like GTA 5, which is a game I really love, the game has like a lot of dark stuff in it, but also like there's a lot of things they do to uplift the game in terms of like humor and satire and all that stuff. And then GTA 4, which is another Grand Theft Auto game, of course, like that game I didn't enjoy too much, and that's because like I felt like it was fairly depressing. But also,
yeah,
that game was also good from a different angle. Like it was good because of because I think how they tackled that specific story and that specific subject matter, and that specific world was good. But I personally didn't enjoy it as much as the others because like I didn't want to have anything to do with it just because it was kind of depressing. So I'm glad to see Watch Dogs 2 is great from that aspect. Yeah. What else have you been up to this week?
So after Watch Dogs, I just started playing BioShock, which it is what it is. It's cool. I never got to play the original, so it's fun. Next. Nice. Then Last Guardian. I'm playing that one with my girlfriend who's not a gamer, so... I'll find a game that we can play together, or I'll play and she watches and she's like, oh, go do that. Let's try and figure out this puzzle. So right now I'm enjoying it.
Nice.
I'll see where it goes. I never played any of the Team Eco games before, so it's fresh to me, whereas for other people it might be like a lot of the same stuff from Eco or
Shadow of the Colossus.
Shadow of the Colossus. Mm-hmm. I never played those. I missed out on those ones. So the gameplay mechanics are more fresh to me. So it's I'm really enjoying it. And I think it's a very pretty game, even though some of the stuff seems a bit dated. The kid and the monster look fantastic.
Yeah, they do.
So I'm going through that.
How does your girlfriend feel about it?
It was late and she was a little tired, so we didn't get to play too long. I looked over and she was sleeping, so I paused it and put it on hold for another gaming night. But before then we've just been playing like walking sims. Like the first game I played with her was actually Until Dawn, So we did that, and then we did what was the other one? Firewatch, and Everyone's nice. Gone to the Rapture. So we've been playing those ones. So this is the first gamey kind of game that we've been playing that has a little more platforming or stuff like that. So she's liking it right now, but we'll see how it goes.
Nice.
We're not too far into the game. And the game that I've actually, along with Watch Dogs 2, that I've played the most since the holidays, which this is very strange, is WWE 2K17. I had no idea it was going to suck me in the way it has, because I played all the wrestling games on Nintendo 64 and then didn't play any wrestling games for two generations of consoles. Then I played 2K15. I sold it within a month. This game, the mechanics, the gameplay is pretty perfect. I don't really know what they could do to make it better, but what makes it so special is the content creation that the players can do themselves. They have allowed you to import faces, import logos, like create whatever you want. So you can go out and download completely created, fully fleshed out characters from other wrestling organizations, and they're perfect, and they look exactly like that character. They have the exact face. They actually look better than the characters that are in the game, and it's just incredible. So I've essentially just been, I'm playing it as if it's a Japanese wrestling game, and I'm not using any of the original characters, and it's amazing. And I've been downloading some Lucha Underground characters and all that. I've put countless hours into it.
Dude, that's awesome. Mostly just
downloading characters.
Dude, I think those games, the WWE games, are like the best games as far as creation tools and creation in general, and creating like your own stories and stuff, because
it's fantastic.
I remember playing SmackDown Just Bring It. I think that was my first wrestling game. And I remember, I can't remember if I created wrestler in that. But I remember like fighting different wrestlers and like making my own story in the head, because I used to be really into WWE, and I think at that time it was WWF.
Yeah.
And so I was into that, and I was into the storylines and stuff, but I didn't really get into it until SmackDown versus Raw 2007, which was like, I know it was like a weird year, but like that was the first time I 100%ed a game, because I couldn't get enough of just creating a character and going through story mode and creating like stories for these different characters, and creating like, I made like the Black Undertaker just because I was a fan of like that. Like I was like, I was like emo in high school. I was probably darker in high school, not like physically, but like in terms of like style.
Undertaker wasn't emo enough for you.
Yeah, and so I was like, oh, I'm gonna create a character, and I want him to be just like the Undertaker, but he's gonna be like me, and so he's gonna be black, so he's gonna be the Black Undertaker. And so I made
the Blundertaker.
The Blundertaker, the Blacker Taker. No, like he, yeah, I made that. I made Jeff Hardy, because Jeff Hardy wasn't in the actual roster for that game, but he was on the television at the time, and so yeah, I made like a bunch. I actually made, because there are communities online dedicated to making to having formulas for different characters, because at that time you couldn't like download uploaded characters that people made, and so like people would go online, look at these different formulas, which were like, these things were so in depth. Like, I wish I could print it out and like and send it to you guys, so you guys could understand. Like it would be like sheets of like five sheets of paper with like head -7 +3, eyes -2 +4 for like the x and y axes for each of them, eyebrows, like cheeks, like it would have like all of like the dimensions for each of like the body parts, and each of like the each detail had a certain thing to it. And then like there are different accessories that you can put on each character, and then you can change the color of those accessories, then you can layer them on top of each other. And so like I made Jeff Hardy, I made Tajiri, I made like a bunch of different wrestlers that weren't in this game, just by going online and finding these formulas, printing them out and putting them in, which is like a very, that's not a thing that would happen in 2016. I that's one of those things where I look back and I'm like, man, I kind of missed that. Even though I think the only reason I missed that is because, like, I know for a fact that, like, kids nowadays aren't going to have that kind of struggle. And maybe I'm just, like, bitter that they're not going to go through that kind of struggle. But there's something very endearing about that. And, like, having
your damn millennials and their participation trophies and not putting exactly. in inputs into a WWE game.
Exactly. And I don't want to sound like that, like that old guy that's like, oh, these millennials are out here freaking trying to be good people and trying to give people universal healthcare and all that stuff. I'm not trying to be that old person, but I'm like, man, I kind of get it though. It's like, it's almost like when, like, you see, like, really old people, like, really old people that, like, miss racism and stuff like that. I feel like that, except with, like, these WWE, like, recipes and so. Yeah.
Remember racism.
That's a thing. That's a thing. Have you been up to anything else?
Actually, just the other day, I watched the first episode of Cabinary of the Iron Fortress, which is
sick.
An interesting anime, to say the least. It seems, I believe it's actually by some of the same creators as Attack on Titan, and it's a similar idea where it's these monsters are trying to get into their town, but it's like if you mixed Attack on Titan with zombies and Snowpiercer, the movie. So it's these people that I guess they kind of live in train stations and they go around on these trains and they're being attacked by these zombies and they shoot them with these like nail guns. And it's really cool. Like, it's really stylish. It's got really high production value. I think it's actually Amazon has streaming rights for it. So it's their first anime and they're throwing a bunch of money at it. And it's really cool. And the main character, it's not like the normal like hero archetype. He's a scientist. So he's developing the weapons. I don't know. I think it's really cool. And the zombies kind of look like the sloth character from Full Metal Alchemist. So I really like that. So I'm looking forward to get back into that, but it's subtitled. So I have to be in the mood to read a lot, which this is not always the case when I want to sit down and watch something.
By the way, for the Attack on Titan situation, I found the connection. The series was directed by Tetsuro Araki.
Yeah.
And Araki was the main chief director for Attack on Titan. There
you
as go. Well.
You can see the direct reference. Because when I was told about this show, it was sort of like, it's kind of an Attack on Titan ripoff, but it's by the same guy. So it's kind of cool.
I mean, the animation is way better as well.
Yeah, like it looks really, really good. It looks like there's a lot of money was put into the show, so I'm excited about it.
Do they use 3D models in that show or no? I feel like I saw like a couple of seconds of stuff, like, and it looked to me like there was like a different type of animation.
Like, yes, but it also looks like they have some like texturing on it, so it doesn't. It looks kind of 3D, but not the jarring 3D that you sometimes get in some animes.
Yeah.
It looks.
I feel
cool.
you on that one.
It's well made.
No, yeah. Apparently, the studio that made it, Studio Wit, apparently was founded by old producers from Production IG.
Okay.
Yeah, if you know that studio, they're like super popular. they do a lot. So Production IG is like a super popular anime studio, and they do like a lot of the sports animes and like a lot. If you like know a lot of like a if you know a big popular studio or a popular anime, they most likely did the animation.
Oh,
like
right
they on. Did Kuroko no Basuke. They did what else? They did Haikyuu. Like all the sports animes that I watch, they do the animation.
Do they do that like, Food really War one? Because that one looks pretty.
Oh, I don't know which one who animates that one, but I know for a fact that they do both of those. And apparently, the studio is also the studio behind Attack on Titan.
Okay, cool.
So not only is the director, but the studio is also there.
Somebody, or one of the guys that did Attack on Titan was also related to Death Note. I'm wondering if it's the director or something. Anyways. But, so the next thing, well, one was, I'm hyped for Overwatch Chinese New Year. We talked about that. And then just me staring longingly at my Final Fantasy 15, wondering when I'm going to get back to it. I put so much time into it. I'm at the part where, actually, I know from listening that you didn't really pay attention to everybody else and all the hype and the negativity or whatnot. So I don't want to ruin it for you, but I'm halfway through the game, and that's sort of where I left off, because then the holidays hit and I got four more games, so I started playing those instead. But I'm going to go back because I've been waiting 10 plus years for that game. And it's, and I, like, I'll say it's the, it's as good as Final Fantasy, what was the, I guess 12? Was that the one before the online? The last one they did on PS2?
13. FF14 was the online one. Yeah.
I think you're talking, I think you're thinking about 13.
No, yeah. 13 was on the
PS2.
Yeah, never mind. The last one on PS2, which was the one that was kind of a little MMO, but single player. Anyways, it was fine. Anyways, I think this one's better than that one. So I think I rank it as like maybe my fourth or fifth favorite Final Fantasy, which is saying something because I love those. Nice. But yeah, so that's what I've been playing. And
awesome. By the way, I just found the Death Note connection. Yes. I'm sorry. No. I've been preparing for this anime research. Well, no, I've been preparing for this anime podcast that we're starting in this month or next month. So like I have all these like webs, like tabs open of like how to search for this director and like how to connect these things together.
I'm imagining a conspiracy wall where you have like threads.
Yeah, the photo of the dude from Always Sunny where it's like him wearing the suit and the cigarette and he hasn't smoked or he hasn't slept for 3 days, and it's like the connections, man. Like that's me. But yeah, Araki, Tetsuro Araki, the guy who directs it, also apparently directed Death Note as well in the earlier part of his career.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Sick,
that,
fam.
That makes sense.
Nice. All right, well, I think we should probably get into topics.
Yes.
This episode, we have two topics, one show topic and a guest topic. And so we'll start with the show topic, which is simple. In celebration of the inauguration and Donald Trump coming into his presidency, our topic is, should video games be political? And I'm going to leave that as open as possible because I just want to hear, like, your guys' thoughts just based on that question alone. I don't really want to, because we can get into specifics, and I think that's part of what maybe I want this discussion to be about. And so I'll step back. What do you guys think? Should video games be political?
Yes.
Also, or, yes.
I think it doesn't have to be yes. Like, I think it can be a plus if done well. Mm-hmm. One specifically a few years ago, it wasn't necessarily politics per se, but it was with religion, was Dragon Age Inquisition was 100% based around religion. And you could side with the church or against the church, and it wasn't necessarily a bad thing. And that was just the way that you led your kingdom, or those were the characters that you supported and you shunned the other characters. And I thought they did that really well, and they made it a moral gray area, but it was 100% reflecting our world, but in a medieval sense. So I thought that was really cool, and it's the chantry instead of, let's say, Catholicism for us. But like it was really good. And Watch Dogs, I mean, you could say they don't really go into politics, but it's a very left-wing game. And it was a huge positive for that. Like, they were able to, they poked fun at themselves, but they also poked fun at the big corporations. And I thought it was better for that. And like, yeah, games can make a stand. And I think when they do make a stand, it can have a huge impact, but they don't have to. Like, it's also escapism. But anyways, go on.
I think the Watch Dogs example is interesting, because like I agree that like I well my answer to the original question, should video games be political, is like sometimes. The Watch Dogs thing is pretty interesting. I think this is also in relation to like a lot of properties do this, and like I think the idea of creating a story that's all about taking down like either like big industry or going against like big companies or that kind of thing, but also like being a property that's also being produced by a big company is kind of weird. Like, if Watch Dogs was an indie
it is kind of strange, isn't it?
Yeah, like if
Ubisoft,
Watch Dogs was,
like, one of the biggest game companies in the world, is like, man, fuck big industry, and then you're exactly sitting there like, wait, what?
Like, I forgot which
you also fuck with Ubisoft in the game. Which is
you hack into Ubisoft, and like, you
they have a sense
of
humor.
You steal their
it.
Trailer, yeah.
Yeah, and I love Ubisoft for that. I think it's cool. And I don't think, like, that's not to say that, like, companies shouldn't tackle that story, because I think that narrative is important. But it's also weird, because I can't think of the other example, but there's another, like, really strong example of that, where, like, you have this story about, like, taking down big industry, or taking down, like, the forces that are against creativity and freedom and stuff, yet these games and these movies and these TV shows are being put out by the same companies, big companies, that Watch Dogs is probably an open world, like, there's a lot of qualities to Watch Dogs, which are probably in there because it's made to, like, sell, because it's, like, part of, like, big industry and stuff. And so it's a weird conundrum, to me it almost feels like, man, am I being laughed at by, like, the publishers and the producers of this game, because they just sold me a game that's all about anarchy from a company that's, like, that would be, like, against this anarchy if it was against them or something. Like, I don't know, that stuff is weird to me, and I think that's, like, a whole conversation. But I mean, I do think that in terms of, like, the question, should video games be political, I come back to sometimes, because I do think that, like, if done right, it could be cool and it could be awesome. I think it's weird, because I know, like, for one, video games are a business, and, like, the whole point of video games are to sell. But I also think that that shouldn't take away from, or that shouldn't not allow video games to be art in a sense, or be expressive, or make a point, or I listened to a different podcast earlier, and they were talking about, like, having an agenda. And is it okay to, like, write an article with an agenda, or create a piece of work with an agenda with it? The podcast, it was Waypoint. I think it was Austin Walker that was making the point that, like, an agenda isn't necessarily, like, a bad thing. Like basically what you're saying is, should you have opinions, or should you let your art reflect yourself, or, like, your beliefs, or whatever that may be. So I think I think the answer to that is yes, that, like, you should put yourself into whatever you make, and also, like, distracted from making a point or an opinion in anything.
Discouraged.
Discouraged. That's the exact word I was looking for. So yeah.
It's what I'm here for.
Shout out to the fantastic Mike. Ian, do you have any thoughts?
So this is a hard question, I guess, but I would say yes, but only, again, I think I'm in between you and Mike, because I think that video games should only be political if it's an additive experience.
Yes.
Because if a game is just political for the sake of being political, then it's really, I can see that being really annoying, because, again, like, games are supposed to be escapism. They're supposed to bring you into a new world. And if you, for example, you're dealing with political stressors your entire workday, and then you come home and you're playing Overwatch, and then Lucio's like, man, why's Trump doing that? You're like, oh, come on, man. Like, fuck, I'm trying to escape this. You know what I mean? Like, or like if Lucio, so like, skates, if Lucio skates on the wall and he's like, Black Lives Matter. And then, like, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to that because I believe in that sentiment. But at the same time, I'm sitting here like, I don't want to think about this right now. I don't want to think about this.
That's,
like,
a good point,
what
actually.
If, like, or, like, what if they added, like, Soldier 76 wears the Make Overwatch Great Again or something like that? Like, you know what
I wouldn't
mean?
Be surprised, to be honest, if Soldier, like, 76 had a Trump hat.
Like, you know, like, again, hat. And that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean, like, an additive experience. Like, if a game is political just because, like, oh, well, it's hot right now, let's make a political statement, haha, then it's really fucking annoying. But if a game is political to as a way to express a message, or to, like, express discontent or, like, an opinion, then hell yeah. Like, speaking of Watch Dogs 2, we were talking about that earlier, and Watch Dogs 2 has a mission where, like, they have a obvious analogous character to Trump. And he gets in trouble because he's, like, paying off the CEO of, like, the Facebook company to essentially put out fake news to, like, fuck with their ratings and stuff, which,
oh,
surprisingly,
that's amazing.
Is, like, yeah, it was super strange, especially, like, when all this stuff is coming out now. Apparently, like, but the only reason why they were doing that is because Facebook this Facebook company, quote unquote, I forget the name of it, but had information on him that he was actually homosexual, and they were blackmailing him so he could get into power so they could use him for their own gain. It was very interesting. It was a very interesting plot or whatever. But apparently, like, you hack him and you take him down, etc. But yeah, like, that made me, again, like what you just said, wow, that's interesting. Like, that, because it was reflecting off of what was happening in our real lives. And that made it more additive, because the whole point of that game is to fight against authority and to expose people that are manipulating the masses behind these, like, ivory towers. And that's the whole point of the game. But again, my same analogy is, in Watch Dogs 2, additive. In Overwatch, distracting. And, yeah, like, other games I think about when I think of, like, political experiences are, like, GTA 4, GTA 5, and stuff like that. Like, and, yeah, I think that if, with both of those experiences, they're, like, making, like, a farce of American culture and, like, American politics and American, like, for example, like, wasn't GTA 4, like, all about an American immigrant's experience and, like, how, how they assimilate and, like, that, there's political undertakings when becoming an immigrant and assimilating into American culture and stuff like that. And same thing with GTA 5 and the American dream. There's, like, all, like, American dream and politics, there's, like, all, like, those are intertwined. Like, you cannot complete the American dream if you're if the policies in the government are not allowing you to. So there's a whole thing with that as well. So yeah, I think if done well, it's great. If done poorly, then it's not.
One more example was Deus Ex: Mankind Divided.
I was gonna say that same exact thing. Yeah.
Yeah. The like, what was it? Biotic Lives Matter. They had on the, not biotics. That's mass.
Ogs Lives Matter.
Yeah, Ogs Lives Matter. They had all over the thing, and you're fighting the police the whole way through the game, and it's very much about police brutality, and, like, that was a specific game that 100% was based off of our real world experiences and would not have the same impact without it. And I loved that game all the way through for that reason. And also, that's one game where you kill the police in that game. I'm fine with it. Whereas in Watch Dogs, it's like, oh, I didn't want to shoot any of the police. So that's where the political leanings of that certain games can influence the gameplay. Like, why would you be attacking the police? Oh, because they're corrupt and they're this and that, and I feel that. Not that I want to kill police in our everyday lives, but, like, but you know what I'm getting at.
No, that's, like, really interesting, because, like, I didn't even, when I played Deus Ex, right, I had a rule that I don't kill the police. Like, I killed, like, all the criminals, right, and all the blacks, but I didn't kill, I'm just kidding, I didn't kill all the blacks. I didn't kill all the blacks. But no, I didn't kill any of the police.
I tried, like, not to.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's probably a better thing. I tried not to. I don't know if I for sure didn't kill any of the police. I might have on accident, or if they got,
I definitely knocked them out.
In my way.
I definitely knocked them out.
Oh, yeah, same here. No, I knocked them all out. They were all asleep. There's, like, I'm pretty sure in one area of the hub world, like, they were just all asleep, because I was like, okay, you know what? Y'all are just annoying me, and so all y'all taking a nap right now. But, no, like, that Deus Ex was a cool thing. I was just talking about this with Alex O'Neill on, because we recorded, like, Game of the Year thing. You can check that out on irrationalpassion.com. But, like, Deus Ex, right, towards the beginning, there's a side mission where you deal with, like, this corrupt police officer. And later on in the mission, like, you're talking to one of his colleagues, and you're like, yo, like, your colleague is, like, is totally corrupt. And during this conversation I'm having with this officer, there is a sign in the background that says, it essentially says, like, all lives matter. And it's essentially trying to be the analog to current day, like, real world, like, the Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter thing. And they're trying to, like, they're trying to depict the fact that this world in Deus Ex, Mankind Divided, is a world that is oppressing people of a certain, I was gonna say race, but it's not really, well, I guess they kind of are a race, but people augmented people. Like, this is a world that's oppressing a group of people, and the people that are in the position of the oppressors are out here pushing a certain kind of narrative. And I thought that was a super powerful thing because it was very much like I feel like that was put there on purpose for to be in the background of this conversation, because it was a weird thing of me talking to this officer about how corrupt this other officer is. Meanwhile, like this sign right here is saying all, like, I don't know. It was so perfect, and it began that game for me on such a good note that. Yeah, it elevated the whole experience. But the weird thing for me with Deus Ex is I feel like later on, I feel like that stuff was kind of like lacking a little bit, or like some of that stuff. I mean, I do think that like some of the stuff can be sometimes like overstated, or sometimes in certain areas like understated. But I don't think that's a political problem. I think that's more of a problem of like narrative and how games go about telling a great narrative.
Yeah, most games and movies, even the ones I love, don't end well.
So, yeah, and that's books. The point.
Like, the amount of things I love that end well is not very big.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I do think the right games, or I do think sometimes games should be political. When they have the ability to, and when they can be at the right time. Like I think. I'd be interested to see, because I think, like, of course, this industry leans all the way left as far as I can see. I'd love to see a game that comes at it from the other side of, like, that, a game that takes a conservative perspective. And I'm sure, like, companies might be afraid to do that because they might not sell, but I don't know. I'm sure, like, conservatives play games, too. The
people making them are left, so I think
they'll
be...
yeah, exactly. We'll see it, but... Yeah. But like, I'd be interested to see like, if there's a game that's a game that just comes out and you play as a cranky old man just complaining about millennials the whole time. Like, I'd be down for it. It could be a walking simulator, or I guess like a walker simulator, since you'll have a walker the whole time. Yeah. But
the company that could do that would be Rockstar. They could do that in GTA.
They probably could. They could pull it off. Rockstar could pull it off because they are some dudes.
They would make it a satire.
They would.
It would be good. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it takes a very smart. Very sharp creator to make something that criticizes both sides of an issue, or all sides of an issue. And that's what Rockstar does, which I appreciate. Like they're kind of like the South Park situation. And like South Park is a cartoon that makes fun of everything. Like, I'm sure South Park is probably left leaning for the most part, but they make a lot of fun of people on every side.
They,
like,
hit
they don't
everybody.
Care.
They hit everybody for sure. And you know what? They'll probably have some of that stuff you're talking about in the new game coming up.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
It's being made in this period. It's gonna reference our times. Like they're very much in the zeitgeist.
There's this game actually that somebody sent to me. I think it was like back at E3 or some event a while ago happened. And actually this was before E3. This is like a year ago at least. And the game's called, like, We Are Chicago.
Remember this game specifically for what happened after the fact.
Oh, what happened? Because I saw the game. Somebody just showed me, like, gameplay of the game. Basically, the game is, like, a game where you play as a kid in, like, inner city Chicago.
Oh, no, I thought maybe I'm thinking of a different game then. But I remember something about, like, a Chicago game where you play as a police officer or something. And it was, like, anyway, go on.
Huh, interesting. I didn't know that. The game I'm talking about is a game where, like, I think you play as, like, an inner city kid in Chicago who like is like basically it's I think it's like a walking simulator. I'm not positive, but it's like a game where you're like basically you'd like deal with the pressures of like selling drugs or being looped in with certain groups and racism you deal with like a lot of the issues that people in inner city Chicago might deal with.
I remember Greg Miller talking about this game.
Yeah, I think, that's where I heard about it, actually. Mm-hmm. It was from Greg Miller. The thing about that game, though, is that, like, I've seen previews of that game, and that game doesn't necessarily look like it. I think they talked about this on Waypoint Radio, actually, recently, and they're saying, like, that the game doesn't necessarily look like that good of a game, but they're tackling such a good message, and it's hard to, like, I think... smaller developers have more of an opportunity to tackle more unique issues and be more free with in terms of how they tackle political stuff and but also like, I don't know, the I don't know, actually I don't know where I'm going with this one, but I don't know, it's interesting to see, and I think more indie developers should tackle it. That particular game, I think Patrick Klepek was actually saying like how he previewed that game and he was like, man, that game wasn't that good, but also like he really appreciates what the game is trying to do, and so he was trying to write a preview about it, but like basically he tried to make a case for the game, but he ended up turning that preview into like saying that, hey, this is a game that exists, the game has these issues, and he wrote that article hoping to shine light on the game, but also hoping that he could urge the developers in a certain direction, which I thought was pretty interesting. But yeah, I just thought that would be a good topic, and it would be a good topic for today specifically. I know this episode comes out on Monday, and so people are listening to this and they're like, oh well, Trump's already like he's already been impeached. Like, what are you talking about?
He already drank the blood of three people. He's already become our hyper overlord.
He let all the white people out the prisons.
He already opened the hell mouth. He's allowing the caca demons to come and eat all of our souls. I mean, like, we're already dead, buddy.
Keep it.
All the Mexicans are gone, dude. What are you talking about? This topic isn't relevant anymore.
No,
we
literally,
talk about where
all
we
the, Mexicans
the Mexicans
left.
Back.
They ascended to a higher plane.
You're like deuces,
to
fam.
Mexico.
You're like au revoir. We don't know why they said that because that's French, but.
Yes, exactly.
The Underground Railroad is not the Lucha Underground.
The Lucha, oh my God, the Lucha Underground Railroad. This is the best hypest thing
Hold
I've
up.
Ever heard.
I need to write that down
because
that's gonna be the name of the episode, the Lucha Underground Railroad.
That's gonna get one person like, wait, what is this podcast about? All of a sudden,
someone's gonna be like, okay, now I gotta listen to this one because, all right, Mike, what?
They're
you have a topic.
Be waiting for that reference all the way through. Yes,
they
do
will
have
be.
A topic.
What's your topic?
My topic is, who are the people responsible for making you the nerd you are today? So, like, the person you are today, who are the landmark people that that brought you here? And, I mean, I'll go first, because when, obviously, for me, for most of us, I'm assuming at some point, it was our parents. And my mom specifically really enabled my nerdiness and my creativity at a young age. She always encouraged me to draw and to draw superheroes and all this stuff. And she saw, like, I saw my grandfather playing Mario. He had the first NES I ever saw. My grandfather had it, and she saw how much I liked it, and she bought it for me. I was like, oh, like, that's fantastic. I don't have too many memories of the NES, but then she would have like a Nintendo birthday party where she had a bunch of TVs and a bunch of consoles. I don't know where she got them from because we didn't own that many TVs or consoles. And she would have all my friends over and we had like a little arcade in our basement and we played, and she, like, I always got the new maybe not right away, but I always got the new consoles and it was always a surprise. And I remember when Nintendo 64 came out, she went to a different city to a Blockbuster when no one could get their hand on a Nintendo 64. No one had one, and she managed to rent one, bring it back home so I could have it for 24 hours so I could play Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey.
Hey. And
just like those little surprises. Dude. Which
Wayne Gretzky's,
like, now,
3D
like,
hockey.
Like,
it's my
I was so spoiled, and I had no idea how much she was just constantly bending over backwards to just let me be happy with my nerdy little hobbies, which is so fun. And then then the next person was my friend Tim. When I was grade two, I met him, and like, he liked drawing, and through our drawings I realized that, oh, he had a Sega. I didn't have a Sega. I had a Nintendo. So every Friday for about 8 years, for the next 8 years of our lives, I would go to his house, and then he would go to my house every Friday, alternating. And we would just draw, play Nintendo, create our own card games, play with our action figures, do all this stuff. So so for 8 years, that was just what we did. And that was a huge... That was essentially my whole childhood, was playing with this guy, doing all these things. And And then, so that's the first stage is little kid. Then that's my, I guess, elementary school days was with that best friend. And then there was a time in high school where I didn't really have any gaming friends. So it was a solo thing that I did by myself. And then there's the point in near the end of high school where you start drinking and doing any Math. Other extracurricular activities, and then playing Halo or playing this or playing GTA. And that's when it was like the college days kick in. So I had a couple friends, Spencer and Paul, and that was those were the guys. Like we would watch South Park. We would go to a cottage and spend a week at a cottage just playing video games, which is not normally what you do at a cottage. But anyways, yeah. So those are the pivotal points in my and what's funny. Well, aside from my mom, obviously we're not estranged, but all those guys, I've moved on from all of them. So it's just like a little nerd checkpoints. Am I like little Mario, like halfway parts, like little things that I check off and with. And yeah. And these days, I guess it's kind of funny, which is interesting. Like I don't game. I haven't had anyone to my place to game with me in like 10 years. Like it's not something I do. But now I game all the time on Overwatch, on this and that, and it's all. I would never have picked up Overwatch if it wasn't for Kind of Funny, and that is without a doubt my game of the year. So that nice. Tells you something.
Nice.
All right.
And for those listening,
off to you guys,
Kind of Funny is a YouTube channel and podcast company. I don't know if that's what to call them. Just in case this is somebody's first episode and they just picked this up on iTunes and they're like, what? What's Kind of Funny? But yeah. For me, I don't know. There are multiple people I can point to possibly. My parents were like vehemently against me playing video games, even though they're the ones that got me video games. But like they got me my N64 and I just played it nonstop. And I think it got to a point where they're just like, what did we do? And so like after a certain point, they're just like, we're not buying you new video games. But eventually, like I convinced them to get me a PS2 and all that stuff. I think one person I'd point to is my friend growing up, Addison, who's like a friend that lived in the same neighborhood. I used to go to his house over to his house a lot and play his games. When I had my N64, he had a Super Nintendo, and so and I think he might have had a PS1. I'm not sure, but I remember like being at his place and playing Street Fighter 2. Playing Mario World, playing what was another one? There was another game I can't think of. Oh, Aladdin. We used to play Aladdin all the time for Super Nintendo, and I remember
it's a random ass game to play.
Oh, dude, Aladdin game, was so though. Good. Yeah, so good. And I remember just being like, I remember going over to his house and being like, "What the heck is this thing? Like, this thing is awesome." And I had my N64, and at the time I didn't realize because I was super young. I didn't realize that like the N64 was like basically the sequel to the Super Nintendo, or like the step up. And I would go home and I play my N64, and I'd think like, oh man, all I want is a Super Nintendo, man. Like that, like those games look so different, but they look so cool. And yeah, like when I got a PS2. I think he also had a PS2. Yeah, he also had a PS2, and so I would borrow his games all the time. And yep. he would always let me borrow the best games. Like I remember when I first played San Andreas, Grand Theft Auto for the first time. At his place. I think actually, let me rephrase that. I played Grand Theft Auto for the first time at his place. I think it was either GTA 3 or Vice City. I can't remember which. And then eventually he got San Andreas, and eventually I borrowed San Andreas from him. And I remember playing those games, not being too into them. But being fascinated by them because I was like, man, this is different from anything else I played. And I also borrowed God of War, and I borrowed a bunch of games from him. And a couple years later, I finally got San Andreas, and I finally got super into it and became like one of my favorite games ever. And there was one weekend I borrowed Shadow of the Colossus and Metal Gear Solid 3 from him. And that was the weekend that probably changed me as a gamer. Ooh, and I went from weekend. Like being like, oh, yeah, dude, I love games, to being like, oh, dude, like games are like next level. Because like Metal Gear Solid 3, I think I played that one first, and I remember starting it off and being like, man, this game is weird. It's difficult. It's open-ended. I don't know if I like it. And I went from that to like being just fascinated with how weird and how cool and how different it was, and being like, man, this story is so cool. Like the boss structure and the fact that all these bosses have different abilities is so cool. The amount of things that you could do, like the ways that you can hide, the things you can, like, you can eat snakes. You can literally eat snakes in this game called Snake Eater. And like, and, I don't know, that stuff was really cool.
They hit the nail on the head there.
They hit the nail on the head. That game was so different to me. The camouflage thing, I was like that game was next level to me. Like, I hadn't played anything like it. I just felt like the systems in that game were so diverse that it just engrossed me. And then I went from that to playing Shadow of the Colossus, which was like, man, like, Metal Gear Solid 3, I always say it this way, Metal Gear Solid 3 introduced me to story and introduced me to, like, great systems and great gameplay. Then Shadow of the Colossus just is the game that made me realize that video games can be art and can be, like, beautiful and this awe-inspiring thing. Because I would, like, I played that game, and I remember fighting my first Colossus, be like, oh, this is a weird, cool thing. And then just realizing that that's the whole game, is just going to these different Colossi and taking them out. And that was the moment Colossi, where I was like, oh.
I like that.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the plural's Colossi. And, yeah, when I realized that was, like, the whole game, I was like, oh, I'm done. Like, I'm done. This is my game. Like, I'm playing this game and nothing else. And that's what I did. And I beat that game quickly. And I just started again and started playing it again. And man, I wish I got it. I wish there was another one of those. There never will be, because they're not making a game again, I bet. But, like, man, yeah, like, that was a good weekend.
PlayStation 5.
PlayStation 5.
If they announce it today. I guess 6. PlayStation 6.
Yeah, I was going to say, if they announce it today, then it could possibly come out for PlayStation 6. So, I don't know where else I can point to. My sister Michelle is a big fan of Super Mario 3. Like, that's like really the only video game she plays, Super Mario 3, and we play that game all the time. We played that game all the time. We had an NES. We bought an NES just for that game, and we played that game. Me and her are like beasts at Super Mario 3. If you give me any game and we're like, hey, play this game well, I'd be like, okay, give me Super Mario 3. Because that's a game where I just run through that game. And I, like, if you go back and watch the Twitch stream that me and Alex Van Aken did, that was one of the games on the list of, like, this is a game that me and you're going to play against each other. The goal is whoever gets more points in 10 minutes. And, like, I think Alex went first. No, I can't remember if it was me or Alex. One of us went first. I don't know which one. But, like, he went and I went and I dominated it. And I don't mean that to, like, toot my own horn or anything, but, like, that's
so
a game.
I just have to do a quick bathroom break, but continue.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll keep talking. Back. Go ahead. That's a game that I just straight up just destroyed. So, Ian, do you have anybody that you'd say is the person responsible?
I think I've said the story before about my neighbor Carly, who showed me video games. But another person I want to give a shout out to is my late grandfather, Gene. And he would always... So, okay, in my family, for context, I'm like the odd man out, kind of. I love art and I love video games, and all my other brothers are like, yeah, sports, yeah, woo, you know. So my grandfather saw that early on, and he always would encourage, like, any of my random activities that I would do. And I remember distinctively, I went to my dad. It was during the N64 days, so I think I was in the fifth grade, around that time. And I went to him, and I was like, Dad, can I have this new game, Kirby 64? And my grandfather, we're in the backyard of my house, and my grandfather is near my father as well in this moment. And my dad says, no, we just bought you a game last week. And my grandfather takes my dad's hand, and he goes, what are you doing, Larry? Buy the kid a game. He wants to play his game. It became like a super serious situation, and I was like, oh, no, what have I done? So... my grandfather got in the car with me, and we went to Toys R Us, and we went and got the game that day, and I played it for the rest of the day while my entire family was outside in the backyard playing in the pool. And it was just me alone playing my games and just, like, doing my thing. And he always supported that, so shout out to him. And then, ironically enough, shout out to my brothers for liking sports so much, because I think the person that I am today is because of the people that they are, and I wouldn't have been the nerdy, artistic person I was if I didn't have people who were the exact opposite of me. So
nice.
Sometimes you need an opposing force to define who you are.
Nice. That's awesome.
I can agree to that.
Sweet.
There you go.
You got back in, like, the last few words and was like, yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
No. I heard his whole point.
Nice. All right.
I'm very sneaky. I'm very sneaky. I was here for a bit.
Let's get into viewer questions. We have just one question this week because I was really late on putting out the tweet. And I mean, nobody's tweeted me anyway, so I'm sad. Our viewer question comes from Joey Rivera. Joey asks, do you think Nintendo will stop making consoles if the Switch fails?
Oh.
Interesting question.
I hope not.
I actually hope so.
I would welcome it, but I really hope that doesn't happen because my favorite consoles of all time are all Nintendo.
I think, I don't think the Switch is going to fail. Like, even though, like, all the information that's come out sucks.
Blessing,
I don't think
it looks... Okay, fine. It won't fail in the sense, like... Okay, fine. If we're doing boxing, it won't get knocked out, but it'll lose on a TKO.
It won't do like near the PS4 or Xbox One, but I think it's gonna do better than the Wii U. I think it does better than the
literally
Wii U.
I could sell door to door chocolates and do better than the Wii U.
I mean, that's a good point.
I think it'll do great.
I think it depends on how much it fails. Like I think it could fail, but also like if it's like an acceptable failure, like if it's better than the Wii U, then I think Nintendo stays in the console game. But if it somehow does worse, then I think they're out. I think then like they go third party. I think they go the second route and start. And I mean honestly, I could go either way at this point because like before I was super hyped for it. Before I was like, oh dude, I'm totally down for the Switch. I think this is needed in the industry. Like we need this. But after that conference and after like seeing, I just don't think Nintendo does good console business anymore. Like I hear the argument that like people don't get Nintendo consoles for like third parties and stuff. People get Nintendo consoles for Nintendo games, and so for the fact that like the biggest games that are coming out on the Switch are Legend of Zelda, Splatoon 2. Mario for the Wii U, Mario Kart Deluxe that was on the Wii U. Well, not Deluxe, but you know what I mean. And the Mario game, like those four games for the year, being the big games that come out, the big Nintendo games that come out this year. And I mean, I can name the other games that are coming out, but I don't think anybody really cares about ARMS that much. honestly, the name has kind of grown on me. And I mean that literally, like literally ARMS grew on me. Sorry, that was a bad joke. I don't know, man. The fact that those are the only big games that are coming out on this thing kind of spells disaster. Like, I think the excuse that like people play Nintendo games or people buy the Switch to play Nintendo games, I think that's accurate, but I don't think that's good. I don't think Nintendo wants to sell to those people because those people will buy Nintendo consoles no matter what. I think Nintendo wants to sell to the people that they lost before, like the people that didn't buy the Wii U, who are the same people that buy Nintendo consoles to play Nintendo games. Those people are already in, I think. I think Nintendo wants to aim for the people that didn't buy the Wii U because, like, if Nintendo aimed for that same audience, then they're not going to sell any more units than they did before. Nintendo wants to aim for a larger amount of people. That's why they have games like 1-2 Switch on there. Like, 1-2 Switch is a game for the casual audience. They're not looking for, like, Nintendo people. That's also true, but like they're not looking for a hardcore Nintendo fans to be trying to sell them 1-2 Switch. That's a game that's trying to aim for a different audience. But I think if Nintendo wants to do that, they have to get third parties on board, because if they don't have third parties on board, then they're gonna have like 2, 3, 4 games a year, and that's just not gonna work out. Like people are, I don't want to go on another Nintendo rant. Ian, can I go on another Nintendo rant, even though I don't want to?
It's the question.
I already had a nervous breakdown before. I don't have the emotional energy to do it again.
I'm going to do it if you really want to. People are comparing this launch lineup to like the PS4 and Xbox One, right? And people are like, "Oh man, like the Xbox One only came out with like Knack and that other game."
The Xbox One came out with Knack. You really must be drunk right
oh,
now.
Oh, sorry. I'm totally drunk. I'm totally drunk. Sorry. People are like, the Xbox One came out with, what's the game? What's the game that looks like a fake God of War? without Kratos.
Rise.
Yeah. The
Xbox One came out with Rise, and I forgot what other game.
Dead Rising or whatever.
Dead Rising 4, but I think that, I don't even know if that was for, I guess that was for first part. Dead Rising 3 or whatever. PS4 only had Knack. But I'm like, yeah, but also they had Battlefield 4, which people go crazy over, even though that was broken. But before it was coming out, we didn't know that was broken. Arms could be Battlefield 4. It could be broken like Battlefield 4. We don't know.
Arms Field 4.
Arms 4. Arms 4 actually sounds like a better name.
Whoa, four arms. We did it. We did it.
we broke the podcast.
Fixed it.
Battlefield 4. Assassin's Creed, Black Flag, and some other third party games which I really can't think of right now because I'm so infuriated by the Switch right now. But no, like there are other games, like there are other big third party games that came out for those consoles. Like those consoles weren't stranded. Like the PS4 wasn't stranded with Knack, and I'm not saying the Switch is gonna be stranded with Zelda, the guy in green. I was gonna say Luigi. It's not like the Switch is stranded with Zelda. The Legend of Luigi, Breath of the Wild. It's not like that's the case because Zelda is gonna be an amazing game. It's gonna be way better than Knack. And the Switch is also going to have 1-2 Switch and the other game, Arms. But that's not enough. Like, it's not enough to, like, get... Well, that's a lie. I was going to say it's not enough to get me to buy the Switch, but apparently it is because I still have it pre-ordered. I haven't canceled my pre-order yet. But it's not enough to get, the mass amount of people to get into it. And I think, like, I don't know if the strategy should be, like, hey, let's aim for this. Let's get Watch Dogs 3 on this thing. Let's get Horizon. Oh no, that's exclusive. Let's get Red Dead Redemption on this thing. I don't know if that's the strategy, but I do think the strategy is to get third parties to make exclusive third party games.
Exclusives.
Yeah, third party exclusives.
They need third party exclusives,
right? And even if they are like smaller games, like I think the Switch should be a console that might be like might not have as like big budget games as Red Dead or Horizon, but they do have like a wide amount of games that are exclusive to that console that get people in. Like if they get like Platinum to develop like some kind of game that's like maybe not as big and fabulous as Neo, which I don't even know how big and fabulous it's gonna be, but like maybe get like their own Nintendo version of Neo, or maybe get like Bayonetta, because I guess that is like a Wii U exclusive Platinum game. Maybe get
They'll
like
probably Bayonetta, get Bayonetta 3.
Get like, I mean, we'll see. Platinum has been going through some rough things lately, but hopefully, like, I don't know, I want to see like new and unique stuff come to this console, just more than what's there right now. Like, do something. But yeah, if the Switch fails hard, like if it fails hard, then they're going third party, I think. But if it's like, if it sells Wii U numbers, then I don't know. Because I think that's like just enough to keep Nintendo like breathing, and so yeah, that's where I'm at. Do you guys have any opinions?
I think they just need to stay away from the multi-platform games, like games that you can play on Xbox and PS4. It's going to be inferior on the Switch because it's lower power. So, like you said, they need to have third-party exclusives made specifically for that console, using that console's strengths, using a unique art style that doesn't need the hardware power. Like it,
yeah.
Because when you think back to when they were huge, GameCube and, well, I guess GameCube was that's when they started to lose fans. But like Nintendo 64, those the games that they had, they weren't all developed by Nintendo, and they were. They weren't multi-platform. Like you didn't see it on PlayStation. You didn't see it on another, on those other consoles. So if you get those companies to, it doesn't need to always be developed by Nintendo. It doesn't need to always be your quirky self making those games. Mm-hmm. Get like throw money at Insomniac. Throw money at these other developers and tell them to do something special for Nintendo that you can't get anywhere else. That's how you're going to get the fans. But if you're just bringing over FIFA, why would I ever play that there? If you're just bringing over Call of Duty, why would I ever play that there? Like, that doesn't make any sense. I'm going to play that on the system that has the higher power, that has the better controller, that has more people playing it.
And I think there is a strategy there, like, somewhere. Like, because I mean, I'm right now I'm kind of saying the opposite thing of what I said last podcast, because last podcast I was like, dude, show me those games, but show me them on the go, because like if you show me like Watch Dogs 2 on the go, like if I can play Watch Dogs 2 on the bus, like that's a very like good proposition, like that's a good argument for why I should buy it on the Switch as opposed. But like you made a good point to where like people love playing FIFA online and playing where their friends are at, and the same with Call of Duty. Like I'm not gonna play Call of Duty on the Switch because like the strong point of the Switch is the fact that I can take it places, and I can't play online on the bus. Also, my friends aren't probably gonna have a Switch for me to play Call of Duty with, and so. But I do think there's like maybe like more single player games that aren't as graphically heavy, because Nintendo's gonna lose that battle every time, because Nintendo doesn't deal with like high graphics. Like, I mean, their stuff has good graphics, but they're not as good as like the PS4 or Xbox One, and so I think that's a losing battle. But you can win the battle if you go for like a game like Neo. I'm sure could run on the Switch. Like, and I'm not a developer, so I could be completely wrong. Or not Neo, sorry.
Yeah, Nier Automata is what I'm thinking of.
I don't know about that. From the demo, I'm like
Watch Dogs could. Watch Dogs could. That game's not too intensive graphically.
Watch Dogs 1 or 2?
2. I think that could work on Switch, I think.
Like, I think, like, and I mean, I could be completely wrong, but I could see Watch Dogs, maybe Watch Dogs 2, and like, Nier Automata seems like a game that's not that, like, heavy in terms of what it's doing, but I could be completely wrong because I'm not a developer.
They do have a good relationship with Square Enix. I feel like a game like Nier, had Switch already been out, would be on Switch.
Yeah, and like I think the fact that it's not coming out for Switch, at least so far as we know, it's not coming out on Switch, maybe a sign of like maybe this game can't run on Switch. But I don't know, like. Wait, is Nier Automata, is that exclusive to PS4? Or is that coming out on Xbox?
That's an exclusive to PS4,
yeah. Oh, well, never mind about that. Then I'm totally wrong on that. But, like, I don't know. Find those games that, like, can run on Switch and probably more single-player focused, because multiplayer stuff isn't going to work that well, I don't think, at least, on Switch. Or multiplayer-focused stuff. Like, stuff with multiplayer in it, like, tacked on multiplayer might work well, but, like, multiplayer-focused games aren't really going to be, like, the draw of the Switch. I don't think. I don't know, man. Find an audience, or find those games, because games is what's going to bring people.
And put, please, just
for the love of God, for the love of God, Nintendo, put Mario Maker on the Switch. If I don't see Mario Maker at least announced within the next, by E3, if it's not announced at E3, I'm taking my Switch and I'm throwing it out the window. I'm not even going to open my window before I do it. Because I want to hear a smashing sound on the way out, then again when it hits the ground. And so I want to hear two smashing sounds. The sound of the glass breaking out my window and the sound of the Switch hitting the floor. Okay. Is there anything else you want to say on that?
I think Ian's all switched out.
Switch
yeah.
Up?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I really want Mario Maker, man. I'm so mad. I'm so mad that there's no word of Mario Maker. That's the reason why I didn't buy a Wii U, was because I was like, dude, they're going to have Mario Maker on Switch, and so I should just hold out. I really want to play Mario Maker. Like, guys, I love Mario. I don't know if you guys knew this. I don't know if you guys can tell, but I really like Mario. And I really like the idea. Well, actually, not even the idea, because I've played Mario Maker at this point. I really like Mario Maker, and I want to play it. But I can't. Or apparently, I'm not going to be able to. Because they haven't said anything about it. Really upset.
The one that kills me is Smash. Where is Smash Bros?
That's also a good point. Where is Smash? It's not in that trailer.
Is it possible to just audio link my own like 45-minute rant? Like just listen to the last podcast to hear what I actually feel about all this shit.
You should do like a video. You should do like a vlog, dude. I think that'd be good screaming. For you to just do a vlog every week of you just talking about the Switch and what's wrong this week. Actually,
I don't have the emotional energy.
Is there any news that's come out within the last week that we can talk about for the Switch? I know we can end the episode now, but just in case.
The what's it called?
Fire Emblem?
Not Fire Emblem. The shit. What is it? So the whole rumor about it, about how their audio thing, their voice chat was going to be through the phone, confirmed.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
But you know what, though? Like, they gave an excuse for it. And
that's not a good excuse.
It's not a good excuse. When I was first listening to the excuse, and I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I thought about some more, and I was like, no, it doesn't make sense, dude. Like their excuse was basically like, oh, if you're going to be having this thing on the go, like, you're always going to have your cell phone with you, right? So you might as well do it on your cell phone. And I was like, oh, yeah, thanks, Reggie. No, it's like when you get, like, I don't know what the word is for it, but, like, I don't know. He got, like, a fast one on me, basically, where I, like, stopped, and I was like, hold on.
Wait,
that doesn't make
minute.
Any sense. Like, I turned around, I was like, wait a minute, Reggie, what the heck are you talking about? Like, just put it on the thing.
This is last gen stuff.
Reginald.
This is like PS2. This is like, they had voice chat during the Xbox and PS2 era. So this is like PS1 stuff. This is like before the dawn of online gaming. Like, I don't know how this is a thing. Where like you're making an online console that doesn't have chat on the actual console. That's crazy to me. That's a travesty.
So now if your friend doesn't have the app. And it's an app you need to pay for, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh,
is it,
my God,
paid
yeah.
for separately from your internet, from the online?
Oh, God, I hope not. If it is, I'm marching to Japan. I'm marching on the water over to Japan.
I am marching.
And I'm grabbing
Ian.
No,
just
come
get a plane ticket,
you
hang out with me for a week, and then we'll just walk into Nintendo and literally
we're tearing that place
down.
Forget
Trump, I'm marching on Nintendo.
Exactly.
We're all going to march straight to Nintendo.
I feel like there's other news that came out. Did you hear? So there's a new Street Fighter game that's coming out. It's not new.
That looks cool.
It's not new, but
they're essentially remastering the old one.
They're remastering.
They're
like
adding new characters and they're making it online compatible and stuff like that.
But it's like $40 or something, I think. And I'm like, that seems like a lot for a game that looks like a Super Nintendo game. That looks like an HD Super Nintendo game. But I guess, I don't know. I saw that price and I was like, dang, Nintendo, like, y'all trying to get every inch of money out my pocket. Like, Reggie,
every
is
inch of the money,
every inch,
every
I feel,
cent. You mean every cent?
Jesus. I know. I mean, I know what I said, Ian. I meant
Come
every
on,
inch.
Blessing.
I meant
oh,
every
wait,
inch.
Wait, so you measure? So you measure how much money you have by inches?
Yeah, dude. Those dollars are long. I feel like Reggie Fils-Aimé is literally like putting his hand in my pocket and just taking that money out of it, and it's like, hey,
like in a sexy way.
No, not in a sexy way, man.
He just snaps
in a brutal way.
All the money leaves your pocket.
In a way where I'm like, dude, no. Like, just no. I saw it's like
no means no. Really,
I feel like no means no. I feel like he showed me a picture of arms and was like, hey, you like this? And I was like, oh yeah, that seems kind of cool. He was like $60, and I'm like, wait, what? Then he just like jams his hand in my pocket and just like takes out the every inch of that money. And I'm like, Reggie, no, I don't even want this.
It doesn't
like not like this.
Whatever. I give up. I give up trying to explain inches of money. I give up.
All right. Mike, where can the people find you on Twitter and on the internet in general?
People can find me on Twitter at Fantastico, which is F-E-N-N, Tastico.
Nice.
And that is my Instagram. That is my... Well, on Instagram, you'll actually see a lot of my art up there because I'll upload stuff up there, and on Twitter as well. And I mentioned it earlier, but you'll also find me on my Etsy, which was, I'll say it again, www.etsy.com/ca/shop/MikeFenDesigns. So you'll find all of my art up there, and I won't be in the U.S. selling my art, but I will be in throughout Ontario selling my, well, not the GTA, the Greater Toronto area,
nice.
Selling my art on the con circuit, and you can buy it all online up there. So anyways, shameless plug.
Yeah. When you said grade two before, I was like, oh, he's Canadian. Like, oh, man.
Nice. Ian, where can people find you?
You can find me at Ian Why Not on Twitter. That's IanWhynot. I live in Japan. That's where you can find me in Tokyo. That's
you can
where I
literally
live. So
find
you
me
physically,
in Japan.
If you want to physically come to my house, Tokyo it is. Come on through, fam.
Nice. And my name is Blessing. You can find me, in Seattle. And you can also find me online at Blessing Jr. That's at Blessing JR on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all that good stuff.
Can you please change your Twitter handle to at inches of money?
Inches of money. That's gonna be my new
Best rap name I've ever heard.
Yeah,
Inches
of money is gonna be like a sick mixtape I'm gonna make. Mark my words. It makes sense.
Wasn't there a rapper that had like a rap thing where it's like money long, hair long? What was that? Oh,
that
shit.
Sounds like Lil Wayne.
Wait, it might be. Wait, I need to look this up now. It's gonna bother me.
That sounds like money a Lil long, Wayne quote. You can also find all of OKB's content on OKBeast.com. Have you found it yet, Ian?
Yeah, it was 2 Chainz, actually.
That makes sense too.
2 Chainz is hilarious, and I hate 2 Chainz' music, but also I appreciate his music at the same time because he knows exactly what he's doing. And there's something
he knows how to do a good guest spot. I like that.
He does. He knows how to do his features. He's good at featuring, but also like his bars are just so dumb that they're good.
Yeah.
Like when he says she got a big booty, so I call her big booty, he knows exactly what he's doing, and I really appreciate that about him. Like he knows how bad that bar is. But at the same time it's so catchy. And so I gotta give a shout out to 2 Chainz. If you're listening to this podcast, stop this podcast, go listen to some 2 Chainz. Preferably listen to Birthday Song. I can't remember what the song is called. It has birthday in it though. Kanye West is featured. Remember to rate us on iTunes. Check us out on Twitter, or not Twitter. Sorry, check us out on YouTube. There is a new OK Beast Mode episode up by the time you're hearing this, and so check that out. It's all about The Last Guardian. My name is Blessing. That has been Ian Prichelle. Our guest has been Mike Fenn. We will see you next week. Say bye to the people, guys.
Bye to the people, guys.
Deuces.
Ooh, he went up me.
I did it.